I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Clash. So on Monday, we spent the show running around London Soho in American Werewolf in London. But today, we're off to Scotland for some bants, bullets and biting as Sean Pertwee and his lads get more than they bargained for in 2002's Dog Soldiers.
I love it when a posh bear talks dirty.
We'll have a winner at the end of the show, but which movie will it be? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Putters. It's that time of the month. I'm Alex Zane.
Oh, I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
I just picked that quote out of thin air.
Yeah.
It's that time of the month. How are you both? Are you looking forward to part two of American Werewolf in London versus Dog Soldiers?
Yes.
Yeah. That's very, very, very efficient.
Yeah. Very clipped.
Well, we're not going to say no.
That's true, actually.
Yeah,
it's going to be a bad start to the show.
True, you've pointed out what a wasted question that was.
Otherwise, I would have said no last week when we did Outland.
But you wouldn't do that because Outland was great. We've had a great response. Great response on Twitter.
Really?
One of your mates likes it.
Yeah. It's like Donald Trump. Great. Great response. We've had a fantastic response. So very quickly, if you haven't subscribed to us, if you would be kind enough to do that on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, that would be great. Massively appreciated by the three of us. And also, if you can give us a rating and a review, that would be awesome too. Because if you give us a review, it might be read out on the show by Chris Tilley, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly, which sounds a bit like this.
This review comes from Lucy, who says, "This podcast is incredible. I've never been more obsessed with something in my life. I pretty much binged this while decorating my room, and it was incredible to see the journey the podcast has gone on. Vicky's charm and opinion shine. Chris's infinite knowledge wows me. And Alex's unwillingness to let Tim Curry go is inspiring." Now, I don't know where you're up to, Lucy, but aside from a mishap in the Omen episode, Alex has let Tim Curry go.
You have.
He's gone.
No, I haven't let him go. I felt like it was becoming more of a chore than a pleasure.
Sure, yeah.
To do the obligatory
just
Tim Curry
course,
reference.
Yeah. Yeah,
things. Shall I bring it back? That's my question, really. Shall I bring it back, Lucy? I think, Lucy, do you want it back? I can bring it back. I could bring it back, Chris. I mean, I know you're not a fan.
I think maybe we shouldn't bring it back, but maybe we should do a Tim Curry film. That'd be nice.
Then it'll be a natural thing to do an obligatory Tim Curry reference.
We've got some saved up, haven't we?
We have got some. Let's do Clue. That's a great Tim Curry movie.
you're clueless. That's what you are, mate.
No, I am.
We've already done it.
We've done it. It was a great episode with Knives Out. Love that shit. All right, then. So, Chris's choices this week, American Werewolf in London versus Dog Soldiers. Very quickly, remind us why.
Because American Werewolf in London was born on the same day as Vicky, and that's this month.
That is correct. 21st of August, if you do want to send a card to the podcast studio.
Yeah. I noticed she mentioned it. She wants a bit of birthday love, doesn't she?
Unbelievable. Do you want a special quiz where only you play?
No.
No.
That's what it felt like on Monday.
She was that good. Because, you know, when do you start loving your own birthday? I know you're supposed to as a grown-up, you've been like, oh, I'm not really, but I do love my birthday.
Oh, I hate it.
But I love your birthday and your birthday.
We hate your birthday. right then, let's crack on. So on Monday, Victoria was thrown out of a pub in Yorkshire again. And today, I'm hanging out with some men and monstrous mutts in Dog Soldiers. Let me take you on a journey. Sean Pertwee and his lads are on a training exercise in Scotland, except it's not really. And with such an excess of trained members of the army, they're in fact being used as bait by the special forces, as opposed, you know, any other kind of bait. Not that they're aware of this. They're too busy talking about football and women and horrible stories about mates being blown up after getting tattoos of the devil. That is until a cow falls on their campfire. Suddenly it kicks off. No, not the football, but the discovery that the planned reintroduction of wolves to the Highlands may have gone too far after they're attacked by ruddy great werewolves with surprisingly slender bodies like furry ballet dancers. Holing up in a farmhouse, they try and survive the night while supergluing Sean Pertwee back together. Sadly, most don't make it, including Megan, a woman whose story I still don't fully understand. And just when all seems lost and they think it's all over, it is now. How is that the last line?
Unbelievable.
That is fucking terrible. Like, I have got like 10 other lines that it should be, including one that it sets up at the start. That, what? Just what? Ladies and gentlemen, for your consideration, Dog Soldiers. All right, then. Histories with this movie. I'll start. First watch for me.
No.
Yeah, never saw it before. I remember all the posters and everything, and there was a bit of hoopla about it at the time, and I remember thinking, I should watch that, and then I just didn't get around to watching it, and I'll explain why that's disappointing when you hear about why Neil Marshall sort of made this movie. I wish I'd watched it about 20 years ago after the pub.
I'm beginning to doubt your love for Sean Pertwee. Because it feels like if you really loved Sean Pertwee, you would have seen this within
this
the last
premium,
19
premium
years.
Pertwee.
It's premium Pertwee. Because you've made me love Pertwee.
Right.
And Vicky's right. I think this is the
top
ultimate
shelf
Pertwee performance.
I mean, I don't want to pull back the curtain, but my love for Pertwee comes from my love for Event Horizon and Smitty in Event Horizon and meeting Sean Pertwee and going, I just want to talk about Event Horizon. Him going, all right. And that was great. And that's where my love comes from. So, yeah, I maybe should have seen this if I was a Sean Pertwee completionist. So when did you see it, Chris?
Watched it in the cinema when it came out. I'd had a few beers. I very much enjoyed it. I bought it on DVD. And I remember loving the commentary as much as the film because everyone involved is having a right laugh, ripping the piss out of each other's performances, which you don't normally hear in a commentary.
Yeah.
They're just laughing at how bad each other is.
Yeah, they're kind of precious creatures sometimes, actors.
They're having a right laugh. They obviously got on. And I really enjoy introducing this film to American friends over the years, as I'm sure we get onto this, but I believe it premiered on television in America rather than getting a theatrical release. So it didn't get the publicity or the notoriety that it maybe should have, like it did over here.
Well, let's cover that now. Yeah, it was on the Sci-Fi Channel in America as opposed to a theatrical release, which still bums out Neil Marshall, who felt it should have got a theatrical release.
Understandable. Yeah. It's an audience movie.
Go on then, V.
I'd seen it once before.
Okay. This wasn't on Mark's VHS shelf.
It sure wasn't.
No.
And I was confused by it. And annoyed by it, and ultimately quite entertained. So I went back into it being like, this is a laugh, this is fun.
And?
Fuck,
don't
this
spoil
film.
It. I paused for too long before I said don't spoil it. So fuck this film.
Yeah, bit.
Okay.
No, there's a lot to love. There's a lot to love.
Right, well, before we start fucking this film, would you like to know a little bit about it? I'm sure you would. So it's director Neil Marshall's debut feature, the film he made just before he hit the mega big time with the massively successful The Descent, which is still one of the scariest films I've ever seen.
I love The Descent.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Scary movie.
It's one of the few movies I've watched in a packed cinema. Normally when I'm in a cinema, I'm not scared.
The last shot where she's got the light. Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
It's the bit where they first see one of the creatures in the distance, like drinking. It's such a scary
just
film.
Getting claustrophobic would freak me out in the cinema.
Oh, I tell you what, we should do The Descent one day.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a great film. So it's 1995 when Neil Marshall starts writing a script for a low budget werewolf movie that he wants to be his debut feature. He says he'd always wanted to do a siege movie and combine that with his love of horror. But what he didn't want to do was make a curse of the werewolf movie, because he said that has been done so many times, you know, tragic stories about people bitten by werewolves and how they eventually become a werewolf themselves. He said he wanted to make either Aliens or Predator, but with a werewolf, which...
Keep trying. Sorry.
She's already fucking this movie, Chris. She said, I said, we'll fuck this movie in a bit. So, the script is finished in 1996, and the slow process of getting investment and a cast together begins. One of the producers wanted to change the name to Night of the Werewolves, which I don't mind, but Dog Soldiers is kind of catchy. Could have been very different casting, though. So, Neil Marshall initially wanted, for the role of Cooper, Kevin McKidd's character, Jason Statham.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because Kevin McKidd is an excellent actor and does bring much needed like seriousness to this role.
Yeah.
And but Jason Statham would have been tons of fun as well.
It would have been a different movie.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know that you could have had...
You can't have Statham and Pertwee.
That's exactly what
you
I was
can't
just
do
say,
that.
Yeah.
That's mad.
Yeah. He'd seen him in Lockstock, wanted him to be in the part, but then as production was sort of getting off the ground, it was a bit in limbo. Statham gets Ghosts of Mars, and Neil Marshall says, you've got to go work with the legend John Carpenter, do Ghosts of Mars. Questionable decision.
Should have done this.
Having seen Ghosts of Mars, you're like, on paper, sure. For the role of Spoon, the guy who has the fist fight with the werewolf at the end, he wanted Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg, they had a meeting, but Pegg had promised Edgar Wright that Shaun of the Dead would be his first film, so said no.
Really?
That's right, yeah.
Why does something have to be your first horror film? I don't even understand.
Well, they're mates, aren't they? Like, yeah, you don't want to let your mate down.
Together,
yeah.
And it's sort of like, I think he was on a promise, like, you know, we'll do this together. You'll direct your first movie, it'll be my first movie. Because they've been best mates for so long. It was like, it was probably a promise, so.
Odd.
Really?
Oh, God, business is business over there, isn't
Jesus.
It? Jesus.
I think you've said so the most cold. You've ever given away about who you really are in that moment. It's fucking terrifying.
I think it would be appealing to have someone be in a successful horror film and then be in your horror film.
I just realised what a cutthroat environment this podcast really is.
Yeah,
I thought we were all terrifying. Friends.
I've just never heard of anyone saying to someone else, oh, your first horror film has to be with me. Like, I don't understand what difference that would make.
I mean, it's sort of a nice thing.
I would encourage my friend to go make a successful horror film.
All right. Okay, business is business.
I just think it's sad.
Let's get that on the posters for the podcast festival. That first live show, business is business.
You keep saying that.
Come in and enjoy some business.
Should be uplifting your friends, not holding them down.
All right. Well, before therapy, Sean Pertwee arrives, having been passed the script by Jason Isaacs, which you've got to believe happened on the set of Event Horizon.
Yeah.
So he gets the script and he signs on as Sergeant Wells. And you touched on this. Apparently everyone had a blast filming it, even though it wasn't very nice. They were in Luxembourg, doubling as Scotland in the winter. And Sean Pertwee says, we were really in the shit. It was cold and muddy and you were never really aware that the camera was there, which makes it sound like Tropic Thunder. So regarding the werewolves, I know I made a joke out of how they look because they look stupid, but they were intentionally meant to look like that. Like,
bullshit, sorry. Carry on.
But Neil Marshall says he wanted the werewolves to be kind of graceful, so he hired dancers, not stuntmen, to play them.
That's okay, I get that. It's just the costume that they're wearing is shite.
I mean, first of all, it's a small budget movie, so we got to create a little bit of leeway here for that. I like the idea of graceful werewolves. The problem was he then put them on stilts and they were effectively blind in the werewolf heads, so all the grace went out of the window, so they couldn't do that thing anyway. My problem, if we're going to do the werewolves now, is the faces. It's like, it's just the heads don't look scary enough.
Nope.
Like, and that's a really weird thing. I could even forgive the fact that it's a dancer in a lycra suit,
sure,
with a massive head on,
yeah,
like, kind of out of proportion. But I just wish the faces were scary.
I understand the budgetary constraints, of course, and it isn't fair to be like, well, it should look like a multi-million dollar thing. But your film is about werewolves, so you got to start there and be honest with yourself and say, you know what, that werewolf looks awful, so let's do a different Siege movie then. Like, let's get rid of the werewolves. I can't do it right now. I'll do it later in my career, because he's a brilliant writer-director. And the werewolves just let this down a lot.
It's a weird way. I think the problem is that, you know, if you sort of look at the comparisons that are made with this, that he makes himself, it's like, you know, Predator, Aliens. It's like, you've got scary fucking looking creatures in those. Yeah. And that is regardless of how well you do the makeup or anything, they need to look scary.
Yeah.
And then they just don't.
They just don't. You know?
So that was a bit of a problem for me. But there we go. Other than that, squaddies love this movie. It was the most watched movie by British forces in Afghanistan and Iraq for a short while.
Wow.
So they got the camaraderie and the bants right.
I wondered, yeah, I bet they did get the bants right. And I'm not judging, but I just wonder, in real army life, how many times does someone refer to their squadron as like, you big, great big bunch of girls? And I bet it's like every 20 seconds. Come on, ladies. Come on, girls. You're having a fucking tea party. Just shit like that. That's fine. I appreciate it. It's verisimilitude, I'm sure. But
yeah, and Neil's got, you know, I know Neil a little bit. I will say that now. And we've talked about this. He's got family
Chris,
soldiers.
Business is business, mate. So.
Well, Neil, if you're listening, can you come on and talk about Excalibur with us one week, please? Yeah, he's got, I think, an uncle or a granddad or a brother in the army. He's got lots of family members in the army. Yeah. So I think a big part of what he wanted to work in this script was the authenticity of the language they use, the way they interact with each other, and the manoeuvres. And
I think that's great. I think that works really well. Mm. And again, just to be very clear, there is a lot to love about this movie. I do think fundamentally, like, I did have an issue with the werewolves, but that's not a comment on like what the movie is as a whole. It's just when your big bad isn't quite scary enough, it's a kind of fundamental flaw. So that's a bit of a problem for me. But that doesn't mean it's a terrible movie by any stretch, as we're going to find out now as we go through it. Any more before I jump into this? No? No? All right. So we're in Scotland, where a couple are on a hiking holiday. There's a gift given of a letter opener that's solid silver, so look after it. All right? Solid silver. So that's a nice gift-giving moment before she's dragged out of a tent and killed without really screaming very much.
But I love this scene.
Yeah?
Because like, there's no music. It's so good. Like, it's just happening. Mm. And he doesn't, like, the boyfriend doesn't immediately run to her rescue because his brain is obviously like, what the fuck is going on? Mm. It's so good.
Well, particularly as the tent unzips slowly.
Yeah.
I think that says a lot. So this isn't the animal. This is something with a brain.
Yeah.
Who is teasing them or toying with them a little bit.
Do you know what it reminded me of? And it's good because the reference made me, you know, I sort of projected that onto this film. The grizzly, the documentary, you know, about the bears.
Oh, yeah.
What's that? What is that?
Grizzly Man.
Grizzly Man, that's it. So they were sleeping in their tent, and there's just this awful, and they don't play it in the documentary, but there's this awful recording of like the bears just coming into the tent and just like, killing everyone.
They would have ripped up the front of the tent like you would expect this wolf to.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. It slowly opens it.
But she's actually interested because you'd think it was a man, basically, a pervert on the loose, and he doesn't do anything. And I love that. You know, why should a man have to like run to protect you? But they do just kind of watch to see what's going to happen. I don't think they grab anything.
Well, I think it's that thing where you freeze.
Yeah.
It's probably what I would do.
Yeah.
You know, when you hear a noise and you're lying in bed, you freeze for a while. It's like, what am I going to do?
This scene is my living nightmare when it comes to camping. Genuinely, I find camping scary. Not frustrating because you're always wet or damp or too hot, but the idea of having no protection, nothing solid between you and anything outside.
It is scary when you think about it. Yeah, it's part of it. But if you get the paranoia late at night when you're lying on the floor freezing to death, you can't come back from that because you're like, anyone could open this. Mm.
Yeah. Have you ever been camping in Scotland? I have.
No.
Spent a lot of time camping in Scotland.
Okay.
Very wet.
Yeah.
A lot of fucking midges. There, that's what you should have done. If you couldn't get the werewolves right, midges.
Midge soldiers.
So we're now in Wales, 2 hours earlier.
Annoying.
Which I'm so confused by that. I wrote
just
it down.
Just run them in parallel. Cut. Run the scenes in parallel. If they need to be happening at the same time, which they don't,
no.
Just run them in parallel. Because then we go 4 weeks later, so your brain... Yeah. I'm pretty stupid.
Okay,
I'm like,
good.
What?
I'm pleased it wasn't just me, because I was like, there must be a reason. And I spent too long trying to figure out why it was 2 hours earlier and there was no need for it to be 2 hours earlier. Okay, good. Chris,
Yep.
Yeah. So we meet Cooper, who fails a test to make it into Captain Ryan's special forces because he won't do a Kingsman and kill the dog.
I've wrote that down. There's two or three things here that films have nicked, and that is a massive
big
one.
Steal.
That is a massive one.
Big steal.
Yeah, I love the fact that he really fails him. Because when you're watching this, you're like, well, that's a test. Mm. And he's going to not shoot the dog. And he'd be like, congratulations, son, you're on the team. It's like, no, you fucked up. It's
or
good.
He was going to, like, I think they do in Kingsman, he pulls the trigger and there's no bullet in the chamber.
Yeah.
And so he was never really going to actually kill the dog. It was more a test of obedience. But, I mean, here we go. So Cooper says, I didn't say I couldn't kill a dog. I just won't kill that dog. Surely. That sets up a really good final line where he goes, I told you I could kill a dog after he kills fucking Captain Ryan.
Otherwise, what's the point of him coming back to life at the end to talk about the football? No one cares about the football.
You've literally got fired by this man for not killing the dog.
And he's standing there and he's like, they think it's... I was like, you're joking me that you're saying this.
It's painful.
Yeah.
It's painful, especially when the line is, I told you I could kill a dog.
Yeah.
It's there.
It's right. It's been written down by you.
I got so angry at that point. Anyway, let's move that to one side for the moment. Liam Cunningham as Ryan is glorious.
Yeah,
Davos, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
He's just so good. A fucking proper bastard. He shoots a dog while saying things like, do I look like a sodding comedian shitwipe?
He's also the funniest on the commentary. He's the one that keeps getting annoyed that the dogs are getting more close-ups than he is. He keeps having to go at Neil over it. It's very funny. He's a very funny bloke.
Yeah, he's so good. Right then, so it's 4 weeks later now, which actually makes sense. So we're back in Scotland, where Sean Pertwee's Sergeant Wells is leading his men on this training exercise.
For fuck's sake. He says for fuck's sake a lot.
Of course he does.
He's great.
Was he actually a soldier, Sean Pertwee?
I mean,
swear to God, man's born to it.
Like, he said he played by the time
so
the script,
many soldiers.
He said he played a shit ton of soldiers, but when he got the script, like it was like all the sort of bants and like the way they spoke to each other and how dialogue heavy it was a surprise to him.
He nearly grew a handlebar moustache for this role. Would you have liked that?
Yes.
Okay. He was relieved he didn't do it watching it back, but...
No, because he needs to look like one of the lads, like, and that makes him... It's a classic symbol of like a bit of a toff kind of thing.
Yeah.
So no.
True that.
Is it?
A little bit.
It's like just sort of...
I thought it was sort of a manly virility.
A handlebar moustache?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe you don't know what that is.
Do you like the village people?
Australians like a big handlebar moustache, don't they?
Yeah.
The cricketers, the big tough cricketers always have handlebar moustaches.
Sam, Tombstone. Everything.
Oh, yeah. Miss Elliot. Sam Elliott.
Elliott. Sam fucking Elliott. There you go.
Very manly.
Yeah. So Neil Marshall says he really wanted to give the squad these sort of recognisable personalities and, you know, get you invested in them. There's one weird thing, and I want to know whether it affected you guys or it was just me. The squaddy, who is Joe, Private Joe, the guy who loves the football, I spent about a good 5 minutes thinking he was the hiker, the male hiker from the start, because they both had shaved heads and looked really similar.
Oh,
and I was like, isn't this weird that your girlfriend's just died?
But you're not bothered.
And you're talking about the fucking football. Then I remember Chris and I was like, well, actually, that's believable. So I thought it was a bit of a mistake. It's clearly just me. Mm. Given the hiker at the start a shaved head.
No,
I was
just thinking that for a second. All not right. for a second.
Aww. So that's just me.
Although the football banter, the only thing I found weird about it was when Pertwee says he wants to jump in a warm bed with a hot woman to watch the footy. That's not normal.
He's being funny because he says it's a bath. You jump in a hot bath with a nice woman.
Okay.
And he's changed it around.
All right.
It made me laugh. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I was more concerned.
It's wordplay. It's funny.
Fair enough.
I visualise stuff too much.
I thought he was being literal and I thought that... I don't want to do that. I either want to watch the footy or jump in a warm bed with a hot woman. I don't want to do them both at the same time.
Right, okay.
Do you not?
No.
Why? Why is that inconvenient?
You need separation.
Okay.
Yeah. I need to concentrate. I need to focus.
So you want to be in a warm bed watching the footy, but on your own?
Yes.
Okay.
And then it doesn't matter how warm the bed is.
Right.
Right, yes.
I want to be in a warm bed with a woman.
Okay, but you can watch the football anywhere. All right. There's some foreshadowing here. It's a training exercise, not exactly life and death. What does it mean when he's told that he doesn't want to foul her in the penalty box?
It's a euphemism. I think you can fill in the blanks however you want.
I am not telling you.
I'm unclear on the rules of football.
Okay.
Please let us know on Twitter, I guess. I can't get an explanation in the studio.
I think we just need to get away from this whole area.
So...
this whole box area.
I don't want to be fouled in it. Now, the campfire scene. This is a great sequence. I love this because I'm getting to know the squaddies a bit better. I'm a bit upset that Bruce dies so early because he seems very different to the rest of them.
Is he the man that runs into a tree?
He's the man who runs into the tree.
Does he really run into a tree?
Apparently you can do that.
Bullshit.
If the branch is sharp and you're running full pelt, you can impale yourself.
But he's a trained soldier. You think he'd be looking out for obstructions?
Yeah.
I just assumed he was pushed. I didn't quibble with the scene. Mm. I assumed the wolf had pushed him. That's all.
Yeah, have that.
Get off.
But earlier on, I couldn't work out whether this was clever or I just attributed something to it that wasn't. Someone says, "What scares you?" And he goes, "The self-destructive nature of the human condition."
Yeah.
And he does kind of self-destruct by running into a tree.
Yeah. But it is weird when Cooper, is that Kevin McKidd's character, Cooper?
Yeah.
What scares you?
Women.
And it's like, what? But I understand it's squaddies and whatever, but they're not all like, yeah, women fucking terrify the life out. But they're men with families and girlfriends sometimes and whatever.
I think they cut a scene. You have to tell me this because I've watched deleted scenes in the film and I'm getting a bit confused. A mate of his has nicked his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Oh.
And there's a scene where he's showing photos. It doesn't really work, where he's showing photos of him with his girlfriend and this bloke's talking to her in the background. So he's got a reason for hating women at this moment in time.
All right.
But because that's cut, I think it's a bit strange with Cooper's character, particularly as the film then, I think, goes on to reinforce his opinion.
Yes.
Because Megan isn't to be trusted.
Yeah.
And so I don't like that aspect of his character and obviously of her character as well. And so not so much of her character, but it's just, that's our hero. And he's our hero.
I think it would be funnier the way you do it. Like, what are you scared of? Spiders, women. And someone's like, what? And he's like, nothing, just spiders. Like, that's funny.
Chris is absolutely right. And it's a shame. I'm sure they were cut for time. But at this point, this whole idea of getting to know these people, there are a load of deleted scenes where they're just running through the woods on this exercise, where they're just chatting with each other, and you do get a slightly clearer idea of who they are.
Yeah, I'd love to see
that. There's lots of good stuff, but I guess the problem is it's running at an hour and 47 or something already, isn't it? When it feels like a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
45.
But they are good scenes. There's some really good banter. But the campfire scene is Sean Pertwee's monologue about...
It's insanely good.
Isn't it?
Because what is he actually saying? And what he's saying is, my mate, got blown to bits, but his bum didn't. And you're with him, you're like, so his arse cheek was fine. His arse cheek was fine. Yeah. And it had the fucking devil on it, yeah? And you are like, in my head, I was like, what is this film? Like, what is happening? But Sean Pertwee, God love that man. You're like, that does sound terrifying and weird and funny as fuck, obviously.
And it is kind of setting up that we might not understand what's around us.
Sure, he buttons it. He's like, you know, it taught me to have a very fucking open mind, whatever. But just you've written that on purpose, I presume to make me laugh, which is you could have had that devil tattoo anywhere, like on your back, on your front, whatever, but it's on his bum. Mm-hmm. It is, isn't it? He was like, he's great big fucking thing.
The film got re-released last year at 4K. And they did some press for it. Neil did and Sean Pertwee did. And I got a quote from Pertwee about why he likes that scene. He said, "No one wangs on for 6 minutes. It's an actor's dream."
Yeah.
Really, it's such a good story. And we were doing so well. It felt like we'd been together for weeks. We were in the middle of the night, in the snow and in the rain and the mud. And it all came together. And that's what it feels like watching that scene in the same way the scene that it's paying homage to does, which I'm sure you were going to bring up.
Wait, I wasn't. What scene?
Quint's speech in Jaws.
Oh, do you think it is?
Yes.
Okay. 100%. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't pick up on that, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a real, and it's also a fantastic moment of tell, don't show.
Yes.
As well. Sometimes it works with someone just telling you a story.
It's wonderful, and he delivers it so well. He did say that he read it, and he was like, it's about 5 minutes of dialogue. That's not making it in.
Yeah.
And he couldn't believe it was in the final film. It's so good. It's such a good scene, and yeah, on that subject of the camaraderie between them, he said it was quite weird. Sean Pertwee talks about how because they didn't have any budget to keep actors overnight, the minute someone died in a scene, they were off to the airport and flown away.
Went home.
So it felt like people had actually died. Like, well, they'd just gone.
That was the Platoon thing as well. Because that only works when you film in order as well. And that's what happened with Platoon.
So we are discovering Captain Ryan, who all his team are dead. The cow falls on the campfire.
I love that.
Brand new jump scare for me. Never been scared by a cow falling on a campfire before.
And to be honest, the only scary moment, really, because that's the only one I really jumped at.
Was it catapulted by those knights in Holy Grail?
But it's, so I proper jumped.
And yeah, me too.
Then he went, did you just jump? Yeah. I was like, no.
I believe he wrote as well that the cow sort of starts cooking on the fire and they eat the meat to sort of set them up as savages like the wolves, but that didn't make it into the film, which I thought would have been an interesting counterpoint.
So they meet Ryan and you're like, oh, he's still alive. Mm. He's definitely going to become a werewolf at the end. And Cooper will probably say, I told you I could kill a dog.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Liam Cunningham said, he's a loveless, empty, humorless character. He's fabulous.
So we've already done Bruce dying. Sean Pertwee, it's sausage time.
It is, isn't it? I mean, it's good because of the surprise, because I was just like, you would be dead. You'd be dead right now. There's no way you're standing up. You can't sit in a van. You are fucking dead. You're dead as fuck. But obviously it's like, surprise later. But I was just gutted because it's like, oh, he's going to be out of action. I don't want him to stop talking.
I wrote down the same thing. I was like, Smitty dying so early in Event Horizon. If Sean Pertwee is sidelined too much in this movie, I'm going to lose my shit. Mm. Thankfully, he's not out of action that long.
Too long, yeah. But it's painful that he is. I don't like it.
But it's great, isn't it? Him saying they're not going to fucking fit. Mm. And then these mates saying they fit last time and trying to push them in. It's just, it's that funny, shocking humour that's so effective.
It sounds pretty grim, though. He says whatever they stuffed the animal intestines with that made up that prop, it went off very quickly. So it stank and he'd have to, they had a thing when they were hanging out where he'd sit at the dining table and they had to have a bucket next to him for him to put these rotting intestines in while he ate dinner next to everyone.
They weren't real intestines they used, though, were they?
He says it was like pig sausage meat.
You don't have to do that anymore. Literally, that's what special effects people's job is, not to have to use the real stuff.
Yeah, apparently it was the real stuff. He says it smelled to high heaven, which is a nice way of putting it. So we've got this great running battle, which is smacks of Predator, where the werewolves are chasing them through the woods, and then they run into Megan and her Land Rover, and immediately there are these suspicious looks between her and Captain Ryan.
Mm.
Which goes nowhere.
It goes fucking nowhere.
It goes nowhere. And in Neil Marshall's defense, he says that was not his decision. This was forced on him, this kind of backstory that she'd met Ryan before and there was something going on there. And he said he cut loads of it out. But unfortunately, the fact that there's still some bits in, you begin to get invested in what this story is. And then the fact there's no real payoff is like, oh.
Well, on that commentary, when Megan reveals that she knows Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Marshall says that makes no sense at all.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was distracted by... I've got a lot to say about Megan. She's literally like no woman you've ever met in your entire life ever, but fine.
Because she's a wolf.
Yeah, but you don't know that at that point. You're just like, who is this woman? Like, she's not like anyone ever, but fine, whatever. That happens all the time. But Cooper's telling her how to drive. And I was like, she's meant to have a mean streak, a mile wide or whatever. And he's like, he's literally going forward, right, reverse, right, forward. She's listening to him. He's like, I can fucking drive, Cooper.
Come on, Coop.
But he's in the military. He knows how to get a Land Rover that's stuck in the mud out of the mud.
Yeah, you move it forwards and backwards a bit.
I don't drive, so I'm guessing here. That would be you shouting at me. Don't shout at me. It's making it worse.
It's making me get all stressed.
And we'll continue after this break.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right then. And then we get into the second half of this movie, which is Assault on Precinct 13 with werewolves, where they are stuck in the cottage. We already covered this. I was going to ask what you think of the werewolves, but you've made that abundantly clear.
I'm sorry to be so down on it, but it's a werewolf movie and they're not scary. They're not creepy. They're not anything. They just look daft. They just look like the cheapest Halloween costume I've ever seen.
I quite like them.
Do you really?
Yeah. I don't find them any worse than the dog at the end of American Werewolf in London, to be honest.
That's mad.
I think it's more interesting, maybe, to have your werewolf on two legs. Otherwise, it's more like a wolf or a dog film.
I've seen that a million times. You always see a werewolf on two legs.
And I like the fact you really don't see them that much. I think when I've maybe not liked the way they look, it's when I've seen stills from the film where...
And you know what?
And behind-the-scenes stuff. Whereas I don't think he shows them often enough for me to...
Towards the end a bit, but...
I think that the weird thing is... So, come with me on this brief journey, but I think it's because they're never made that monstrous in terms of their personality. Like, I think they feel like just animals that are sort of hunting this. Whereas I think, like with Predator, like that Predator is killing and it loves killing and it's enjoying it and it's sort of gleefully setting these traps and murdering people and chopping their limbs off. And I think if you'd given the werewolves like some sort of a weird enjoyment of this, like they were toying with them and they were more malicious, intentionally malicious than they are, that would have given them an added fear factor.
There are glimpses of that because of what they do with the zip, and then they can fire a gun, and then they've got like the meat pack downstairs. I feel like with Megan and Ryan, because they're the only two werewolves we meet when they're human, we have context for them. They have personalities. And so I think the film could have done more with those two when they turn.
I challenge you. Megan doesn't have... Name two things about Megan that aren't she's a woman and a werewolf. Go. Don't say zoologist.
She doesn't like you helping yourself to food in a house that isn't yours.
That's true. What does that make her? House proud? Don't know.
Well, I think
selfish?
It's... Selfish? Considerate?
Considerate.
She's considerate.
She's considerate. Yes, good. One more, and I won't go on about her anymore.
She's a zoologist.
No, doesn't count. Okay. She's getting her period? Doesn't count.
I don't think she is.
She wears a vest? Doesn't count. She doesn't wear a bra? Does that count? No. There's nothing about her.
Well, I think the thing with her is trying to figure out where her loyalties lie. Because I feel like...
Chris, you're being so generous. I cannot express to you how much I hate Megan in this until the end. Because then it's cool, it's fine, I've given up. And when she's like, it's that time of the month, it's like, yes, Megan, brilliant, whatever. But there's so much time spent with her where it's so obvious she's a werewolf anyway. It's so fucking obvious. So if it's going to be that obvious, we need to know more about her as a person to make it sad for it or cool or whatever. And you're just like, I give up, give up.
So it's trying to understand where her loyalties lie in terms of the fact, I think they flip-flop during the film. She thinks these soldiers are going to save her. And then when she realises they aren't, she sort of turns against them. But it's trying to understand what her relationship is with that family, because we get, she's taken a photo of them, but she's not part of the family because she said she's come to be at one with nature, and she met them when she came to work in the forest. And so I'd love to get a sense of the journey she's been on and then how that reflects in how she behaves in this movie, because I spent too long trying to figure out whose side she was on. Not whose side she was on, but why she was picking a side and why it was changing.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote down all the dialogue in her big speech where she's like, we've got no chance. There was there is no out. There never was.
There never was,
no sense.
And you're sort of like, I don't understand what plan
you were
was.
Doing, yeah.
So you hoped they'd take you out of this, but you're still a werewolf and it's still a full moon. So you were going to change eventually.
Yeah.
What is this? What is your escape plan?
All along?
Exactly,
yeah.
Because she does say to the soldiers that she thought they were going to save her.
In what way?
No, exactly, because that contradicts it. I mean, was it that, you know, there is a werewolf law that if you kill the first werewolf, everyone is saved.
Right.
But we never hear that. That would make sense for what she thought was going to happen. And then when she realised, oh no, Ryan's here to breed and bring more back. These guys are just going to kill us, all of us.
Yeah.
Therefore, I'm screwed. But you need more information.
Mm. Yes, agreed.
Yep, there we go. That's good. Fine. We see a dog eating Sean Pertwee's intestines.
Is it? I couldn't tell. Is it the bandage?
It's the bandage.
Is it really?
It's the bandage, but a lot of people, Neil Marshall says, a lot of people watching think it's his intestines.
I thought it was his intestines.
I did, and it's definitely not. Watching it now, you can see it's the bandage, but because it's a bloody bandage, you think it's the intestine.
I thought it was the intestines.
And it's much more effective. And that's what he wrote originally. He originally wrote intestines and took it out because it was too messed up. And then anyone thought it was anyway.
So he's like, get that dog off me. He's like, he's literally eating you.
What do you think is on the stove?
Human soup.
It's human flesh.
But this is the thing. This film, when we're...
That explains her line, don't just help yourself, because she's trying to stop them eating human flesh.
Yeah, and I think they talk about it being pork, but...
But it doesn't... This is what's so frustrating about this film. When you're with the lads and you're outside and you're on a training exercise, I love this film, you get to the cottage, no. Because they're like, he says, I bet that's not pork. And you're like, yeah, I bet it's people. So you're all going to turn into... Anyone who ate the soup turns into a werewolf. Someone throws up... No, I know, but the werewolf lore is fucked around with in this film quite a lot to fit the narrative. So it's like, who knows what might happen next? Like, you might eat some human soup and turn into a werewolf.
I did think that for a moment when she said that. I was like, who's eaten the soup and who hasn't? Who's going to turn and who isn't?
Well, it's Goldilocks, isn't it, as well? There's an aspect of Goldilocks.
But the soldier throws up, and I was like, this is the start of a transformation. You've just vomited, and that was that.
Well, he vomited because he ate human flesh.
Yeah. Yeah, but
it will do that to you because that's what happened when I... What? Shut up, Chris.
So we've got the big operation on Sean Pertwee in the bed upstairs. Super glue was really used to glue wounds back together in the Vietnam
War.
Oh,
really? Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, that's a true fact. True dat. So this whole scene where... I love this. This is why I love Sean Pertwee. So this scene where he's like... He said to Neil Marshall, he was like, so I'm supposed to be really wasted. I'm hammered on a bottle of scotch and painkillers. Can we experiment with alcohol? Because apparently it's a big no-no, obviously, on a set. You don't use booze to act drunk. You just act drunk.
It'd be like showing up to a podcast piss.
What on earth is that? So apparently Sean Pertwee was like, let me have a bit of a drink just to get into character. And Neil Marshall says, I don't know how many a few was, but it was way more authentic drunk acting than you often get in movies. And I'm happy with that.
When they're watching that scene on the commentary, he just says, I can't remember this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he made up the line where Kevin McKidd, Cooper, punches him and he spins back around and he goes, not like that, you pussy. Do it harder, do it properly. And apparently Kevin McKidd punched him and caught the end of his nose. And blood spattered against the wall.
Wow.
And everyone was like, oh, I didn't know there was a blood pack. He was there. And it was his fucking blood and he broke the tip of his nose.
Ooh.
Yeah. So some great drunk acting there with drunkenness. 50 minutes in, we get the first use of the word werewolf. We go through the weapons in a proper aliens homage where they go, we've got this ammo for this gun, we've got this ammo for this gun, proper.
I like that. I like learning new things. Mm. Like, this is what this does. It's good.
Electric kitchen knife.
Yeah.
Classic weapon.
I love that put the pans on the stove as well. I thought that was Lord, like, how to survive. Yeah.
Yeah. New stuff. Not something I've not seen before.
That's from Straw Dogs.
Oh, I should have seen that.
Yeah, yeah. But Dustin Hoffman balls up the water. So there's lots of lovely homages in this film. And if that is one, it's a good one.
Another one is the werewolves shutting down the generator, just like the aliens do in Aliens.
Why do the wolves eat cars? Why do they do that?
To stop them escaping.
So they're super smart, right?
Yeah.
But they are distracted by bright lights.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because there's a section where they're trying to lure the wolves somewhere by shining a headlight, and the wolves are like, oh, fuck a light.
No, they run towards the light.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but
they're not that smart.
It's a guy holding a flare, so they can see the guy holding the flare. He lets them know. He sneaks out.
Yeah.
So they don't know he's there.
Yeah.
And he lights the flare to go, I'm over here, so the other guy can get to the barn.
But do they eat the cars, or do they just shred them?
Shred them.
With their nails.
I know this movie fucks around with werewolf lore.
It does.
Not that much. They okay. don't, these werewolves aren't car-eating werewolves.
I thought they were a bit.
So we've got Sean Pertwee out of action for a bit. Disappointing.
Sad, yeah.
You mentioned the hilarious moment where a werewolf steals a shotgun and then fires it back through the window. That's funny. Megan does have a good line here where she's talking about werewolves and she says, if they're real, what else lives in the shadows?
Yeah.
Which alludes to an idea that Neil Marshall had for a sequel to this, where Cooper is then in a world where he realizes supernatural creatures exist and he's hunting, for example, vampires or something. So that's why that line's in there. That makes me wish we'd had that sequel.
Yeah, I do like that line.
And Megan cutting her hand on the glass as well on the commentary, the guys say, Neil, explain that. He goes, it's probably not worth it now. But the idea was that would be the setup for the third film in the trilogy he had planned. Which was going to be to do with her DNA.
Okay,
but we might be getting a sequel.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
What, she leaves her DNA on a window?
Yeah, there was a scene where they make a point of her cutting her hand and the blood's on the glass.
I remember the scene.
Pouring out
yeah.
of her hand.
But then the whole farmhouse gets blown to bits. I don't know. I got cross with that because I was like, oh, you're a werewolf then because you've cut yourself and you've got this little band, this cute bandage. So that's that.
We find out, as I said, Megan was working with Ryan. Annoying payoff to
why and why does Cooper, when Ryan's by the fire, I thought he might turn into a vampire because I was like, I think all the rules are being broken. Like, it's a full moon, you're a werewolf, turn into a fucking werewolf, right? You can sit there by the fire or whatever. But
this is the interesting thing, because I didn't really understand this, but the idea is that you can choose, you can almost hold off.
Yes.
They use the piss shit analogy.
Yeah, gorgeous.
But it's about stopping yourself turning for as long as you can, and then eventually when yeah. you have to go.
But Cooper, his character at this point is like, I don't give a shit what, it's the enemy. Yeah, I don't know about, what's this werewolf business? I don't know about that. And goes over to Ryan and says, take off your bandages. So he's referring to part of werewolf lore, which is you'll be healed. But Cooper isn't that person. He hasn't said that before. Where does he know about that from his character being like, it doesn't matter to me what these things are, they're the enemy. Okay. That just it just jumps like that, just frustrate me.
Isn't the idea with Megan that she has this self-control that maybe the men that live there don't have, where she's able to suppress, she's suppressing it
yes.
until she lets it go free.
Yeah. Yeah. You can do that with your period, so that's true.
Oh, can you?
Just clench, yeah, oh, for as okay. long as you can, yeah.
Oh,
it goes back in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't tell if you're being serious or not.
Do you really? You can't hold your period in.
Oh, you can't?
No.
Oh, okay. I just feel that, you know, we shouldn't put misinformation out there. They go to get
I can.
Wear a mask. Wear a mask.
They go to get the Land Rover from the barn. I mentioned this because the great, beautiful, horrifying scene where he flicks on the lights and he sees Terry being eaten still alive.
Yeah.
Love that. That was good. So Megan's story, she's part of the family on the farm. Da 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 da. Pertwee's back. He's all fixed up.
Yay.
We reveal that Ryan was there to catch werewolves for a special weapons division, which feels like a bit of a late reveal because we kind of worked that out. But he becomes a werewolf. Megan tells him the werewolves are in the barn, so they should blow it up. But there aren't any werewolves in the barn. She tricked them.
Why?
I don't know.
Frustrating.
Wasn't that to destroy their mode of transport?
She's...
So at this point, she doesn't want to leave anymore.
When before, she's like, they've got...
No, she decided to kill them all.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. Her loyalties flip and flop, but she makes it clear to them at this point. And so she wants to destroy their mode of transport.
Okay.
I love this.
That's clear.
Neil Marshall sounds like a man after my own heart. Love an explosion. And he says the explosion of the barn, it left him reeling and he burst out laughing. He says, I forgot we were running the cameras. Luckily, it wasn't sound dependent because I just thought it was fucking awesome.
It's awesome. It's also bananas.
Mm.
Like the whole thing gets blown up.
Mm. I feel that this bit that I wrote out where we talk about what Megan was actually saying and what she really wanted, we covered, which is just a little bit confusing. So we can move on to the end now. It's a big fight, which is quite fun, running around the house, smashing through walls, smashing through ceilings.
I like boxing a werewolf.
Boxing a werewolf
is
good.
That's fun. It's fun. And that guy was a real life boxer, so he looks good doing it. Like,
this is the way I started to relax again. So I've been annoyed and tightly wound and frustrated. And then when someone punches a wolf, I was like, that's all right. This is fine.
Apparently, you might know more than me, but Spoon, whose full name is Witherspoon and his nickname Spoon, apparently he wasn't called that just for the Matrix reference where they find his remains and they go, there is no spoon.
Okay.
Apparently that wasn't the case. That was just a happy coincidence that they could reference the Matrix there. So Cooper's in the basement with the dog. There's corpses hanging around, which you'll love, were originally used for Event Horizon.
On that commentary, Sean Pertwee says, is one of them me? Because he didn't know that they were using Event Horizon corpses.
Ryan turns up, finds the silver. There's the silver letter opener from the start. They think it's all over.
It's Chekhov's letter opener. You've got to call it Chekhov's silver letter opener.
Chekhov's silver letter opener. Why?
Chekhov's gun.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, yeah, got you.
it's not a Star Trek reference.
but I forgot to mention the Kobayashi reference at the start. That's pretty cool.
Mm.
Where they were.
I kind of get having a Star Trek and a Matrix reference. I don't like it, but I kind of get it. I definitely get them having a Zulu reference. These soldiers would know and love the film Zulu. Mm. But Zabriskie point, I'm not sure these guys are big Antonioni fans. It's a really weird reference for him to make, I think, in this film.
So, house is blown up. Ryan turns up in the cellar. There's a silver letter opener and we get that last line, which it's just such a shame. Should be, I told you I could kill a dog. Fact.
But he did prove Ryan wrong by being the ultimate soldier. He just didn't say it. You got the search is ending.
Mm.
You know the search is ending that everyone uses where he walks out, really silhouetted.
Yeah. Mm.
And then we get all the photos that were taken with the flash that they use.
Mm.
Hangover nicked it.
Oh, yes.
The credits of the Hangover. Kingsman and Hangover, you owe Neil Marshall some money.
Megan blinds werewolves with a camera.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right.
We're way past that.
I know. I'm sorry. It just upset me.
I mean, I guess my problem is, like, Pertwee, this is my problem, because I'm just bored of Sean Pertwee dying in films.
Yeah.
Apparently he was going to be in The Descent, but he didn't. There was a scene with him in The Descent where he dies as well, but he's not in it. Anyway, you become a werewolf for one night. So this is towards dawn now.
Yeah.
I mean, if he didn't sacrifice himself, you know, if he just sort of ran out and like became a werewolf for like 10 minutes and then was back, I'm sure he could find a system whereby every full moon he just locked himself away and could exist as a werewolf.
Werewolf thinks that. And then you get caught short one night.
Mm.
He's self-sacrificing to save his mate. Just because you don't want Sean Pertwee to die.
I know. This is me. And so that's about it. You touched on the trilogy idea. Neil Marshall said in 2015, I think it's fairly safe to say there's never going to be a sequel now, even though he did have a trilogy planned. But then, just last year on the 4K release, he said there's more of a chance now than ever before. There's things in the works. We're seeing what we can do.
Mm.
I wouldn't say no to a Dog Soldiers sequel/trilogy at all.
Yeah, and I think I really like Kevin McKidd as a lead, and I think he's more bankable now than he was then.
Mm.
Obviously, he was coming off Trainspotting, but now he's a big star in the States because he was in that hospital thing that everyone watches.
Grey's Anatomy.
Mm. He's done loads of big TV. So, I would like that. I would like it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, I think there are things that could be done. Mm-hmm. Things that could be done. Any more for any more? No? No? Let's do the bits. Best scene, Victoria.
So anytime someone punches a wolf, that's hilarious. But I'm not mad about the stuff in the farmhouse, but the stuff with the cow and the campfire, I was having a really good time. And the cow, I jumped as well, like unbelievable. And I think it's the perfect mix. Again, with American Werewolf in London, the horror comedy thing and Piccadilly Circus being the perfect combination. This Sean Pertwee's speech is just so crackers what he's actually saying, but it is scary. And then the cow jump scare to button it. It's a really good mix of like, what the actual fuck are you talking about? But also, you have made me worried. Mm. So
ominous.
Yeah.
Really ominous speech, Chris.
Sean Pertwee's campfire speech.
Yeah.
3 for 3, Sean Pertwee telling everyone about Eddie and the devil buttoned with a cow on a campfire. 100%. MVW, Chris.
Most valuable whatever. Even though I've got some issues that I'll talk about in my change, respect to Neil for what he managed to achieve with his first movie. It's a fun film that I like putting on when I'm a bit pissed.
Okay, Victoria, MVW.
Sean Pertwee.
Okay, Alex, MVW. Wow, Sean Pertwee.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Although I will say, very, very, I love Sean Pertwee too much for him to not be the MVW, but Liam Cunningham as Captain Ryan, it comes a very close second.
Okay.
He's so good. All right, then, change, Victoria.
So the line at the end, obviously, when Ryan is a dog, I mean, I felt the same as you. I was like screaming at the telly. It's just sitting there. But then we've talked about that a lot. So this is mad. And it's not. I don't think the film should do this, but I would love to see it where Sean Pertwee isn't out of action at all because he's got his sausage time or whatever. And he is in control.
I don't think sausage time means what you think it means.
No one ever says it's sausage time, so I swear to God.
They do.
But I would love to see a version where Sean Pertwee is like, yeah, the thing that he saw when in with the devil arse cheek sort of tested his understanding of the line between reality and not, but he's firmly on our side. Like, he doesn't believe in any of that bullshit. And he's in control and he goes to the farmhouse and he's got it and he's got his military ops and whatever. And it slowly unravels as these forces like literally push in and push that boundary and force him to accept that what he saw when he was serving was real and all the rest of it. And you just watch him go to pieces. Mm. Then you'd have to switch the cast in and make Kevin McKidd the character that sort of gets injured and turns into a werewolf. And then that's a shame because you rob Kevin McKidd of the lead. But wouldn't that be amazing to see that?
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. Chris?
Apologies because I already talked about it, but I just need to understand Mega's intentions and then the opportunities there to make more of her once she turns, because she should be an interesting werewolf at the end rather than, you know, expendable.
Yeah, I got a weird one. I think I... Did I say this to you earlier? I can't remember. I'll just say it again, seeing as we're actually on the show now. I wish I'd seen this 20 years ago with mates, beard up after the pub, where Neil Marshall, he said he wanted to make a movie for when you come back from the pub, you've had a few beers, you stick on something fun with your friends. I wish I'd watched it then. This was my first watch, sort of with my notepad in front of me, having just watched American Werewolf in London, sort of going through it and looking at it and analysing it. Mm-hmm. And I think I would have enjoyed this a hell of a lot more. And I did not enjoy it. I think there's a lot to love in this movie, but I just missed the window when this would have been the ideal film for me to watch.
I would say it's not a film to watch with a pad and pen in your hand.
No.
You know, it's not that movie.
I know, and I know we often joke about how many movies I enjoy a beer with, and I didn't with this one. Of all the movies I should have fucking watched with a beer in my hand. I was like, no, I'm not going to drink today. So yeah, I just missed my window with this movie. But nevertheless, a lot to love. Right then, that's Dog Soldiers done. It's time for the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Okay, Vicky, I think we know where you're going, so why don't you go first?
Yes, we are talking about werewolves. And in one of these films, I know we've banged on about the costumes, but understandably, it's the budget and all the rest of it. But I feel like the werewolf lore is tampered with to fit the narrative when that could have been an easy fix in the writing. And it's just me being a geek about scripts, but it just really gets up my nose. And the werewolves in Dog Soldiers just aren't great. They're just not. And I think you've got to work backwards from there. And like I said, love the descent. So we know what you can do. And I just felt I'm supposed to be scared and it's funny and all the rest of it. So just because of werewolves, but these are werewolf films, I'm going to choose American Werewolf in London.
Alex?
For a lot of the reasons Vicky just said, I did enjoy Dog Soldiers a lot. And I did. And I sort of, again, I feel like I'm going to have to repeat myself. If I'd watched it at the right time, it would have been a different experience. But I watched it now and I just felt like the werewolves being your antagonist needed to like have a bit more malice about them. I wanted a monster and I wanted something that was gleefully killing these squaddies. And I didn't get scared enough. And I like werewolves to be scary. And the werewolf in American Werewolf in London is one of the most horrifying creations I've ever seen on a cinema screen. So on that basis, I'm going American Werewolf in London.
Hey.
We're a winner!
Hey!
Chris?
Love what Neil achieved with a couple of million on his first movie, and I'll continue to watch it late on a Saturday night when I've had a beer.
Well, invite me around for that. Let's do that together. I think I'll have a different experience, and then we'll come back and readdress it in the future.
You won't come south of the river, so it won't happen.
Okay, come round to mine, and we'll watch Dog Soldiers.
But while I find Dog Soldiers rewatchable, I think American Werewolf might be one of the most rewatchable films of all time. I watched it twice in the same day this week, and it was with the commentary on the second
time. He's got a lot of time.
And I enjoyed it just as much the second time. Like, I didn't enjoy it any less. It's weird and it's flawed and it's tonally all over the place, but it's funny and scary. It's a truly wild ride, and it's also fundamentally changed how movies are made, because filmmakers are still pushing themselves to match that transformation 40 years later. That is incredible. That is phenomenal. American Werewolf takes it 3-0.
3-0 to American Werewolf in London. We have a winner. That's us done. So after that beautiful lupine journey, let's look ahead to next week. Victoria, you gave us a clue on Tuesday's episode, Monday's episode. What was it?
Friends till the end.
Friends till the end. That's nice. It sort of offsets business is business. So what movies are we doing next?
Yes, which David Schwimmer film are we doing?
It's Matthew Perry. Is it? Is it the whole nine yards? Is it the whole nine yards?
No, it's not.
Oh, fuck.
So I'm quite excited about this. So, Alex, you are doing Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Okay.
Don't look surprised. You did say that was fine. And Chrissy, you're doing...
Playing along. Oh, wow. I knew that already.
You're going to do Thelma and Louise.
Lovely jubbly.
Yeah.
Friends.
Lovely jubbly. What's that from? Callback.
Oh, a callback. That's yeah. So sweet.
Thanks. All right, then. So there you have it. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid versus Thelma and Louise. That is next week's episode. Do your homework. We have a special guest coming on as well, don't we?
Hopefully. Wasn't going to mention it now, just in case it falls through.
Let's not then.
I was about to, but yeah. All right.
We can. I'm sure. Yeah, I confirmed it today, but you never know.
Anything could happen. We may have a special guest coming on.
We
How's
are
that?
So professional. Come to our show.
Oh, let's get out of here. Oh, yeah, we've got a live show. Have we? Is that still happening? No, it is. It is. I'm joking. That was a joke. September the 4th, 9:30 is part of the London Podcast Festival. Come along to our first ever live show. More information incoming. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Monday talking Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Bye-bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.